think a couple real bad accidents without someone being responsible could drain it fairly quickly, unfortunately, these days.
The collection of funds used for oil spill cleanup could end. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, December 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Haynes Borough appeals a land selection offer from the state.
By owning the land, we would have the ability to have tax revenue for the plant or the operation.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
In mid-December, lawyers for the state of Alaska announced that they'd reached a massive multi-million-dollar settlement centering on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Under the proposed settlement, the state expects to collect about $165 million in back taxes, primarily from the major oil companies operating on the North Slope. But a new state law allows those companies to pay that debt with tax credits, meaning the state might not see any of that money, at least not in cash. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more.
The fight over rates has been going on for nearly a decade. The Trans-Alaska Pipeline is essentially a toll road for oil from the North Slope. And the state says that the companies that own the pipeline, including BP, ConocoPhillips, and ExxonMobil, charged too high of a toll. And that means the state has been losing out on money. Essentially, the cost of shipping is subtracted from the taxable value of the oil. The lower the value of the oil, the less companies pay in taxes and royalties to the state. John Patasson handles pipeline rate-making cases for the state's Department of Law. He says by 2015, there were dozens of open rate cases.
Because of how the litigation unfolded, every time between 2009 and 2015 that any carrier filed for a new rate case, the state and the independent shippers filed protests at both FERC and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
That sounds like so many documents in triplicate.
No comment.
Mountains of paperwork aside, Patasson says once regulators decided that the rate costs had been too high, there was a lot to sort out between the owners of the pipeline, the shippers, and the state.
So that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years, is trying to see if we could work through all of the rates from 2009 to 2015 on file.
They did finally sort it out. The state and the companies agreed to settle open cases with both federal and state regulatory authorities, and they even came up with a new kind of rate calculation that they'll use through 2021. That should, in theory, keep disputes over rates down. But part of that settlement is that the state is owed about $165 million in back taxes from companies that paid to ship oil down the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. In the past, that money would have been paid directly to the state, but that's changed. Now, the state's Department of Revenue is estimating that it won't see the bulk of that settlement, at least not directly. Instead, the major oil companies on the North Slope are expected to buy tax credits the state owes to other companies and use them to pay off their old tax bills. Right now, the state owes nearly $1 billion to small independent oil and gas companies under a defunct cash for credit scheme that the legislature ended last year. Lawmakers tucked a provision into the law that ended that program that allows companies to buy cash credits and use them against past tax bills.
Because of that, we believe companies are going to purchase, major producers are going to purchase about $100 million worth of these tax credits that are in the hands of the smaller companies.
That's Ken Alper. He's the director of the tax division at the state's Department of Revenue. He says the major companies are probably going to get a pretty good deal out of it.
There's more sellers than there are buyers.
That means that for the major North Slope producers, they're not going to pay full price for those credits, but they'll be able to redeem them for their full value to the state.
From the point of view of the company getting that money, they're just happy to cash out. They want to be able to get their cash and get away. The question is, how much are they willing to accept to do that?
Alper says the state isn't expecting any of this to happen until next year, and there's still a lot to sort out before it could happen. For one, the settlement still has to be approved by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Patasson says that could take up to 6 months. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
As the new year approaches, time is ticking down for Congress to renew an excise tax collected on domestic barrels of oil. The money goes into a government trust used for oil spill cleanup and prevention. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
The Gulf of Mexico and the Bering Sea share something in common. Through the years, oil spills of different magnitudes have leached contaminants into the water. And on both of those occasions, the U.S. Coast Guard was able to tap into cash quickly to launch a response. The parties responsible for the damage are supposed to pay that back. But the Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund acts like a safety net when no one steps forward or companies refuse. It was funded after the Exxon Valdez spill. Oil and gas companies pay a tax, which is the principal source of revenue for the trust. But after the new year, the authority to collect that tax is going away.
So it could reduce oil spill-related research.
That's Scott Pega, a program manager at the Oil Spill Recovery Institute in Cordova. The trust currently has more than $5 billion in it. Still, Pega says without the tax, the fund could be in jeopardy.
I think a couple of real bad accidents without someone being responsible could drain it fairly quickly, unfortunately, these days.
And if that happens, federal agencies could be on the hook to pay for the cleanup. Pega says there have been a few mystery spills in the waters connecting Alaska and Russia. Fishing vessels in the state also account for a large number of oil spills, he says. It's not always obvious who should be held accountable, but he thinks Congress could renew the excise tax eventually. They've let it lapse once before. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
All four men known as the Fairbanks Four, who were imprisoned in the beating death of a 15-year-old boy, have filed federal civil rights lawsuits against the city of Fairbanks and four police officers. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports George Fries, Kevin Pease, and Eugene Vent jointly filed the wrongful imprisonment suit last week after Marvin Roberts filed a similar suit earlier this month. The men were convicted for the 1997 death of John Hartman, and they spent nearly two decades in prison. The four signed a settlement agreement with the state in 2015, granting release from prison after new evidence was brought forward in the case. The men had agreed to not sue the city of Fairbanks or the officers when they signed the settlement. The suits request a judge to declare the release agreement unenforceable. The Honorable Judge Roy Harding Madsen passed away in his home in Kodiak on Tuesday, December 26. He was 94. Madsen was born in the village of Kanuktuk on the Alaska Peninsula in 1923. As a child, he worked at his father's hunting camp. But Judge Madsen retired in 1990 as the first Alaska Native to be a Superior Court judge. Madsen also served in the Navy during World War II. He helped create the Kodiak Area Native Association and was a part of the movement to pass the Alaska Native Settlement Act. Madsen lived a life that touched many in the Kodiak region and across Alaska. He saw many of his accomplishments honored in the later years of his life. The Kodiak Courthouse was named after him. He was awarded an honorary doctorate from the University of Alaska, and recently a documentary focused on his life and premiered in Kodiak. There will be a community potluck held next summer to celebrate Madsen's life. Judge Madsen is survived by his wife, Linda, his children, and many grandchildren. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill earlier this month to identify and assess coastal communities most affected by ocean acidification. According to NOAA, the ocean absorbs about a quarter of the carbon dioxide humans release into the atmosphere every year, and that can have detrimental effects on marine life. The bill calls for coastal community vulnerability assessments, although it doesn't specify which communities would be prioritized. Indigenous knowledge groups, the U.S. Integrated Ocean Observing System, regional ocean acidification networks would be partners in conducting the assessments. In a statement, Murkowski says the bill, quote, proactively addresses a very real issue affecting our coastal and subsistence communities throughout Alaska. The vulnerability assessments would identify communities most dependent on ocean resources, the nature of the vulnerabilities, and specific harmful effects of ocean acidification. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a city donation to a Sitka landmark is voted down.
Any money that they wouldn't have to otherwise pay a contractor to do the work, that they've been neglecting for years is going to end up furthering their agenda.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Changes to fisheries for crab, shrimp, and other shellfish will be first on the agenda for a meeting of the Board of Fish in Sitka next month. The board decides changes to commercial, sport, and personal use fisheries around the state. Proposals to change fisheries in Southeast Alaska come before the board every 3 years. This winter, the meeting is January 11th through the 23rd and will include both shellfish and finfish proposals. Glenn Haight is executive director for the board. He says for the past two board cycles, Southeast finfish and shellfish meetings have been separate.
So for instance, 3 years ago, we had the shellfish meeting in Wrangell and the finfish meeting in Sitka. In Wrangell, the board went through the shellfish proposals really fast. I mean, it was a quick meeting. And just in reviewing that, and of course, with budget issues, we thought it might make sense to bring them together and save some money and bring all the same folks together at one time.
With that said, the nine-day meeting will be split into two sessions. In late December, the board released a meeting agenda and roadmap for addressing the more than 150 proposed changes. Shellfish proposals, public testimony, and deliberation by the board will be in session one, January 11th through the 14th. Finfish, which includes salmon and herring, will be addressed with a new round of public testimony and deliberations, January 15th through the 23rd.
We always will do public testimony before board meetings. In this case, we are going to have two separate sets of public testimony. So if you're just focused on finfish, for instance, coming the 15th is great. You don't need to be there on the 11th to give your public testimony. We will do public testimony again on the 15th.
Shellfish proposals this year include changes to Dungeness, Tanner, and King crab fisheries, along with shrimp and dive fisheries. The finfish meeting will include competing proposals over the Sitka Sound Sack Row herring fishery, along with plans for curtailing the region's catch of king salmon. Other proposals would address changes for black cod, ling cod, and rockfish, allocation of hatchery salmon, and proposed new fisheries for squid and dogfish. Today is the deadline for written comments on proposals. When it became a borough, Haines got to select land from the state. After waiting 6 years, it's gotten a preliminary decision on its choices. Haines has decided to appeal the ruling that would deny them an old gold mine. KHNS's Barrett Wilbur reports on how hidden treasure is slowing down the land selection process.
The Haines Borough is appealing the state's preliminary decision to refuse them a piece of land with hidden value. As borough manager Deborah Schnabel puts it,
William Henry Bay is a piece of ground that was actually the site of an operating functional gold mine from about 1910 to 1925.
Haines' administration is requesting the bay as part of their municipal land selection. When a borough forms, they're entitled to get a certain amount of land from the state. In 2011, Haines chose 9 parcels based on their long-term economic potential, Schnabel says. The borough identified about 2,600 acres they'd like in the Katsahin Flats, where the state has long considered building a ferry terminal if the Juneau Access Road is completed, Chilkoot Inlet, Excursion Inlet, and William Henry Bay. In October, the state issued a preliminary decision. They approved conveying 80% of Haines' selections. They postponed decisions on 3 parcels because they were mislabeled. They are federal lands, which the state has asked for but not received and can't pass on to the borough. The state denied 2 parcels. One contains a native allotment claim still being processed. The other, William Henry Bay. State geologists sampled the bay in 2011 after Haines selected it. They confirmed the presence of gold, as well as rare earth metals such as uranium. Even if the bay was conveyed to Haines, the state would still control those minerals, Schnabel says.
The state holds mineral rights to all minerals, even if the borough owned the land sitting on top of the mineral deposit. The state still has the economic benefit of the royalty.
The state says their interest in keeping the land outweighs the borough's interest in receiving it. Ben White is the Southeast Regional Land Manager in Alaska's Department of Natural Resources.
A commercial mining operation wanted to come into the area. We'd be able to provide them easements for access, land use authorizations. They'd be working with one entity as opposed to having to work with both the state and the borough.
In an appeal letter to the state, the borough disagrees. Since the state keeps the mineral rights no matter what, they argue that denying Haynes the land means the borough would lose more than the state will gain.
By owning the land, we would have the ability to have tax revenue for the plant or the operation or the settlement or the, you know, improvements that are brought in to develop that resource.
They also expressed frustration with the length of time it's taken the state to issue a preliminary decision. Statute says the state should respond to land selections within 9 months. Haynes Borough has been waiting for 6 years. Lee Cole is a resource manager who worked on Haynes' case. He says that even though work started in 2012, it was delayed because the department was downsized.
Between probably 2012 and 2014, there just wasn't staff here. I think that's why I was hired to work on some of these types of issues.
By 2017, the initial work was out of date and had to be repeated. Ben White says the department hopes to reach a final decision within the next few months. They're currently reviewing comments on the preliminary plan, and if the state chooses not to convey William Henry Bay, Haynes will get to keep selecting lands until they receive their full acreage. Schnabel says she hopes to meet with department officials before anything is finalized. In Haynes, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
A hydroelectric plant for a small Southeast Alaska community is a step closer to reality. Governor Bill Walker included funding for Cake's Gunnick Creek project in his capital budget proposal. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the details.
Cake is a village on Kuprinoff Island, around 100 miles southeast of Juneau. It gets its power from diesel generators, which makes it expensive. Officials have been looking for alternatives for years. The most likely option at this point is a small hydroelectric project using water from nearby Gunnick Creek.
It is shovel-ready.
Jody Mitchell is CEO and general manager of the Inside Passage Electric Cooperative. It also runs systems in Hoonah, Angoon, Clukwan, and the Chilkat Valley. Mitchell says Gunnick Creek, if built, will be the third such project for its communities. Two more are on the list.
We have an opportunity with these hydro projects to fix a problem and completely get ourselves off diesel.
Gunnick Creek is ready to be built, but it's been stalled for several years. Now, it's included in the governor's spending plan for the next budget year. The nearly $4 million isn't enough to complete all the work, but it's a solid start. Mitchell hopes to get additional funding through a federal grant. She says the cooperative could also borrow the remaining $3 million. Cake is represented in the state Senate by Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican. He supports construction, but sees some issues.
My concern with this project is that we build, for instance, Gunnick Creek, but it's on a postage stamp rate amongst other communities, and I'm not sure how much the other communities, including Cake, are going to see their utility rate impacted.
The rate is based on the average of costs for all of the electric cooperative's customers. That means Cake will only see some of the benefits of cheaper electricity. But Mitchell says customers there will still pay lower bills.
I believe now that the economics of that, even if we were to borrow the money, would still result in a small rate reduction for our consumers, our member owners.
For years, officials hoped Cake's needs would be met by a new 60-mile power line to Petersburg. That would connect to a regional grid linked to two large hydro projects. The line and an accompanying road have been studied intensely, and it has some of the permits it needs, but it's been shelved because the tens of millions of dollars it would cost isn't there. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the federal plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station.
The Sitka Assembly has reversed itself and voted not to donate $5,000 to support renovations at St. Michael's Cathedral, a noted downtown landmark. An argument in favor of tourism was overruled by concerns about the separation of church and state. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
After deliberation that spanned several meetings, St. Michael's Cathedral will not receive $5,000 from the city for exterior work. At a meeting on Tuesday, the Sitka Assembly voted 4-3 against donating the money for renovations to the historic building. The item, originally presented to the Assembly on November 7th, continued to stir up debate over the separation of church and state. Assemblymember Bob Petruski, who co-sponsored the ordinance with Assemblymember Stephen Eisenbeis, voiced his support.
It certainly does not promote religious activity. There's no reason for the city to be involved further, so there's certainly no excessive entanglement. There's just not any reason except to continue to have an iconic building that draws visitors by the thousands to our downtown and to our community as a whole to move forward on this. So.
The building is a replica of the Orthodox Cathedral built by the Russians in the 19th century. It has major structural problems like a leaking roof and a basement prone to flooding. The money would have come from the Visitors Enhancement Fund and would only be used to help fund renovations to the exterior of the building. Assemblymember Kevin Knox said he felt it was a worthy cause.
And something that we benefit greatly from. You can't pick up a piece of literature that supports our visitor industry and not see that picture, the face of that church.
Mayor Matthew Hunter said the Visitor Enhancement Fund exists to support such projects, and the religious connection in this case is immaterial.
Because we need this structure so that people can continue to come to Sitka and live the history that brings so many people here.
Assemblymember Aaron Bean, who spoke against the measure when it was introduced on November 7th, said even if the money was specifically allocated for exterior renovations, it still indirectly helps the church further its mission.
But it's pretty clear that by doing this, you will be advancing the church's goal. And any money that they wouldn't have to otherwise pay a contractor to do the work that they've been neglecting for years is going to end up furthering their agenda.
City Attorney Brian Hansen said while Bean's argument made sense, it was a common one made in past cases that set legal precedent for separation of church and state, one that doesn't hold up in a court of law.
And it's just that argument for many reasons that has been rejected by the Supreme Court on a number of occasions. But it's when I read the cases, I see it, like I say, liberally laced through all these cases that the divertibility defense is not something they'll consider.
Though Hunter voiced his support, he said he was concerned the city could be sued if they moved ahead.
I did have an interaction with a gentleman on the street who was quite emotional about this issue and said, I will sue you if you support this.
Hansen said that though he believes the donation wouldn't violate the First Amendment and the city would be on solid legal ground, they may still be at risk of a lawsuit, which could be costly.
And then there's a risk of a litigation. If someone files a lawsuit, this is only a $5,000 donation. I would suggest that if a lawsuit's filed, it's not economic anymore to do this, no matter if you win or not.
Ultimately, the ordinance failed 4-3 with Ben Maiasato, Bob Petruski, and Richard Ween voting in favor, and Aaron Bean, Stephen Eisenbeis, Kevin Knox, and Matthew Hunter voting against. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
If your New Year's resolution involves getting off the couch and heading to the gym, why not go for a hike instead? That's the message from the First Day Hikes Initiative, an effort by America's state parks to get more people outside on the 1st of January. Five state parks in Alaska are hosting guided hikes, including Homer, Sitka, and Ketchikan. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell hit the trails in Chugach State Park in Anchorage and sent this postcard.
All right, so we're about 5 or 10 minutes into the hike and walking through mostly birch forest. It snowed a couple days ago, so there's some fresh snow on the ground and on the trees. Parts of the creek are open and still running, and you can hear it as you walk along the trail here through the valley. There's almost no wind here, so it makes a 15 degree day feel like a 35 degree day, so pretty spectacular hiking right now. Ah, you hear that? I just walked around this corner and I'm now in this big bowl surrounded by mountains on three sides, and right now I see two moose and they've stopped moving right now. I think they see me, or at least they hear me. Really just spectacular. All right. It's so steep that I've been just slipping around in my hiking boots. So I'm gonna put on my micro spikes right now, which are like miniature crampons, so hopefully they'll help me grip to the side of the snowy mountain. I can see Denali and Cook Inlet and the rest of the Chugach Range. I think I've reached my limit for today. I can see the sun now, which is wonderful, but I know pretty soon it's going to start heading back down, so I want to make it down to the trailhead before it gets dark. Reporting from the Chugach Mountains above Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Rasha McChesney, Ed Schoenfeld, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Mitch Borden in Kodiak, Gabe Colombo in Nome, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Barrett Wilbur in Haines, Catherine Rose in Sitka, and Emily Russell in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.